Hello and welcome to Blockchain Gaming World episode 83, and we are coming into the home straight of 2020. So for the next few episodes, I'm going to be kind of recapping the year with some of my favorite people in the blockchain game space. And first up, of course, is Jeff from Axie Infinity. Hi, Jeff. How's it going?
Hey, John. How's it going? Thanks for the invite.
So 2020 has been a pretty incredible year for Axie Infinity, definitely in terms of kind of how I'm looking at the year and looking at the data. Not any question in my mind that Axie Infinity has been the blockchain game of the year. Not in terms of the growth. I won't comment on which is the best game, but in terms of growth. We were just kind of chatting a bit beforehand, and you were going to have a look at what you, because you guys are very organized. You put out a lot of material, and you'd put out something at the start of the year, or at the end of 2019, to your kind of road ahead. So when take yourself back to a year ago, and as you were looking forward to what you were going to do in 2020, how does it match up?
Definitely. So at the end of 2020, we had just released the alpha for the
2019.
At the end of 2019, we had just released a new alpha application, and it had gotten a very nice response from the community, but the usage was still very low. I think we had 500 downloads in the first week, and so at the end of 2019, I'm just looking at our year end review. We had three main goals that we laid forth, right? One was to start attracting mainstream users to the Axie universe. The next was to give even greater stake within the ecosystem to our community through a token. And then the third was to solidify our position as a top user-facing blockchain application. So, yeah, I think when I wrote those out, I thought, it was going to be a tough road. I think we made great strides on all three of these. So one, in terms of attracting mainstream users, right, we're not at the huge numbers of a conventional AAA game. But we're starting to get into the tens of thousands, at least in terms of MAU, monthly active users. And we're starting to see different archetypes of users that aren't just your crypto native kind of hobbyists and evangelists getting involved, right? We're seeing people introducing Axie to their real life friends and family. Even their aunts, their grandmas are starting to play. And there's a lot of cool videos on Twitter about that. Obviously, yeah, the token has been a great catalyst. I think the thing that I'll highlight there is I think it was really interesting, launching that token, kind of introducing it at least to the world while already having a pre-existing product. Doing the launch with Binance, I think, was a really interesting experience. I always had the theory that, that projects weren't utilizing Binance in the proper way, where, if you actually did that launchpad event with a product that people could already try out, then you could use that marketing as a event, as a way to get people to actually start using your product, not just kind of buying your token. So I think that will be an interesting takeaway. Solid builders will start to see Binance as not just a fundraising vehicle, but also a distribution channel, I think, for your product.
I'm not going to have the Binance discussion with you, because that would take another podcast route. But I'm going to focus on Axie. But let's unpick one of your kind of three things that you at the end of 2019 you were looking at. So actually you've released two tokens this year. So the first one was a small love potion. I guess what was interesting about that was, it's very interesting. If you look at your on-chain data for the end of 2019, you have an enormous amount of breeding going on, and then basically at the start of 2020, the breeding goes to kind of zero, because you change it away that you breed axes. So previously, correct me if I'm wrong, but as I remember, you basically battled the axes to get XP, and then basically the XP You need to get to a certain XP level in order to be able to breed. That was kind of like the gating you were using. And then you move to a utility token, a small love potion running on Ethereum. And basically, if you wanted to breed, you needed a certain amount of the small love potion. So you basically, it wasn't like a massive kind of fundamental change, but basically you were moving this XP kind of a situation into a token that could be obviously bought and sold. That was kind of right, wasn't it? Have I explained that kind of right?
Yeah. I think you have the basic gist of it.
The basic gist of it. Good. Okay, let's move on. So what was interesting was the small love potion kind of went live and basically nothing really happened for about 6.5 months. I'm sure stuff did happen. I don't mean to demean you, but if you look back at the kind of the small love potion price, basically nothing happened. And really for Axie as well. Because I spend a lot of time looking at on-chain data. Obviously, a lot of your gameplay is off-chain, which I can't see the data for. But a lot of on-chain data, not a lot was going on. Basically, Ethereum games were having a really bad time because the gas price was through the roof because of all the DeFi yield farming. And then suddenly, in kind of early July, the small love potion price, I think at one point it was up about 1,000% or something.
There was a big spike.
Yeah. So that was kind of interesting because we as someone who's running a project and your official title is growth lead, so you're very focused on growing the project. And there are things you can do. So obviously there's features you're adding. You added this new start of the end of 2019. You added this new basically it's mobile and PC way of playing the battles. And then you added a small love potion. So you put that out there, but then there's certain things you're not in control of, and certainly in the blockchain space, there's a lot of interested in incentivized actors who look at what's out there and use things for their own kind of benefit. And that's really what happened with the small love potion, where some people, it was a weird time where lots of these tokens were being launched and people were pumping them up and dropping them down again, and that's kind of what happened to you guys. So do you count that as kind of luck, or do you count that as kind of moving to where the puck's going to be by releasing a token? And or how do you someone running a business, do you have to say sometimes it's good not to be in control of these things, even the successes sort of thing?
So the way that I see it is that the things that we can control are making a beautiful, fun, useful product, and making sure that we have a very strong community. We achieve that primarily through very extensive communication and structuring the Discord, generally giving them more insight into the development process, and also I think a degree of freedom I think through the kind of economic structure of the game. So I think those are the things that we can control. Other things are kind of I would say more market based forces, right? And so I think the whole event with SLP skyrocketing, I think that was some might say that it was luck, but I think it was also that we were experimenting, we were doing these experiments at the kind of intersection of blockchain games and things like DeFi, right? It's like July happened to be around the time of Uniswap, where there were a lot of users coming onto Uniswap, trading different things and finding out about different projects, through Uniswap. So I think that was I think it was the market, right? It's like I think all we can try and do is be the best blockchain game. And have a really strong community, and then certain things will kind of be unexpectedly help us, I think, if we're doing the right things. Mm.
And I guess what was interesting about Small Love Potion was that the price spiked up. I think at one point it was even 20 cents or something crazy like that, and then it kind of came back down again. But it came down to a much higher level than it had been before the spike. And then for the next kind of couple of weeks, there was these regular kind of not quite as large spikes, but it went up and down. There's a lot of volatility in the price, but generally the price didn't go back down to where it was before. And I guess that was an interesting scenario, because one, people started talking about Axie Infinity because what's going on sort of thing, why's this price going up? But then because it was a utility token, so it had a people could earn it in the game by winning battles. And then they, if they wanted to, they would use it by breeding. Or if they didn't want it, they could sell it on Uniswap. And obviously people who wanted to breed axes could go faster if they just bought some of this smaller potion. So you know, there's been lots of games during the year that have kind of used this play to earn marketing tag, which I'm not massively a fan of. But what was interesting, I guess, was because the smaller potion did go up so much in value, that really seemed to then unlock this kind of people who were playing the game, and because the price, the value of their labor went up so much because the price of the smaller potion had gone up, then that really seemed to kind of kick that as you kind of mentioned, people who weren't net kind of crypto natives, and they were doing that. You know, I'm sure they love Axie, but they weren't doing that because they wanted a really cool blockchain game. They were doing it in many cases, kind of anecdotally from what I've seen, is because that's how they were earning money. So I guess we've particularly seen, you know, a well-documented group of people in the Philippines. I think in other developing countries as well, you've seen people, you know, using that to earn either, you know, either extra money or in some cases earn their actual wages during that time. So was that a surprise again?
Yeah, so, you know, I think it was interesting to see, you know, so basically, you know, one of the dynamics is that, you know, a lot of the liquidity for the potions kind of just stayed locked in Uniswap. And, you know, I talked to some community members who they're like, yeah, you know, I provide liquidity on Uniswap because I see it as doing doing my part to help the game grow. Right. So there's kind of like, I don't know, it's some form of trickle down economics where, you know, some of the players that have done really well because of, you know, the growth of Axie over the years, they see it as, you know, their way of contributing to, it's kind of like, you know, I think the way that I describe it to my teammates is that, you know, Axie didn't have product market fit at a certain level of liquidity deposited in Uniswap for SLP, but it did have product market fit at a certain, we don't even have to think about price, but at a certain level of liquidity, let's say 100 ETH deposited in Uniswap. So I think, you know, in the future, you know, blockchain games, rather, it's very difficult for us to like harness like traditional distribution mechanisms, right? It's like we have all these issues with app stores and things like that. And I think like, One of the interesting angles for blockchain games, in terms of distribution, will be putting a marketing budget, for example, into Uniswap, providing liquidity for some in-game resource that you can earn. Right. So I think like the way that I explain it to people is that, you know, most game developers, especially free-to-play mobile game developers, you know, sell some kind of premium gem as, you know, one of their primary ways of monetizing. But you know, in our system, we don't sell that, right? We don't we leave that, you know, that market, the potion market, to our players with the understanding that, you know, what we're trying to do is build a network, right? And So I think like by leaving that as a peer to peer, like fully player based market, that creates a concrete and easily understandable benefit for playing our game that can kind of transcend the typical audience.
Yeah, no, I think it's a very good kind of refining of the point to say it's the amount of liquidity in there. I hadn't really thought of that, but I think it's a good point and a wider point. I think it's actually something that really, unless they are blockchain game developers, it's hardly anyone understands when we talk about the concept of blockchain games is how different the revenue flows are for developers, and how the re-education of game developers has to go 180 degrees. Because at the moment, just because the way we market is, as you say, they provide content and they try and monetize, you know, whether that's an upfront cost or a in-app purchase cost. But the flow is from the player to the developer, and that's how you manage the relationship. Clearly, in a decentralized game, that's not going to work. And the point is, the developer, to some degree, has to, you know, be happy, and actually, as you've proven, has to actually be encouraging of the audience to make money. Because in the long run, that's how they make money, and I think that's you know, took me a long time to kind of understand, and probably I don't understand the nuances of it.
I think so. The way that I look at it is that we are you can think of it as us kind of creating a new digital nation, right? Complete with its own workers, soldiers, and landholders, right? But the idea is that, you know, we are acting as kind of a government where we just take a percent of the GDP, right? So we're aligned with the entire ecosystem because, you know, we want the GDP to increase over time because, you know, that's basically our monetization mechanism. And then, you know, we are taking it one step even further where we don't want to be we don't want monopoly over that, let's say, governmental power within the ecosystem. We want to share that as well with the community. And that's kind of, you know, the impetus. Yeah, that's basically the rationale behind, you know, having this governance token.
Okay, so try and continue the narrative of the year. So we have the small love potion kind of pumps, gets Axie noticed, people flow in. You then have this kind of, particularly in the year of COVID, we have kind of people in developing countries earning their livelihood through the game. But then there's another kind of switch happens, and it's kind of in the end of September. And obviously you've had the physical, not the, I can say the physical actors. That shows how much blockchain I am. I see actors as a physical thing, but no, you've had the Axie NFTs, which are the characters in the game. And obviously people are breeding those, and they're worth different amounts depending on their exact kind of attributes. And there's always been, you know, high end ones. So, you have, a maximum of 4,800 of these origin axes, and then around 30% of those will have this mystical part, which is the most kind of rare part. And the mystics have always been, I have to be honest, I never really understood it apart from the more recently. But the mystics obviously had a lot of kind of headlines written about them. Those were always the high value ones. And then to me it seems sudden. I'm sure it wasn't sudden to you, but at the end of September, we had this company, Delphine Digital, who kind of had been consulting with you over your economy, I understand as well, and they really raised the headlines because they bought, was it four or three, I think. They spent, I can't get the numbers right. Did they, is it 50 ETH for three of them, something like that?
Yeah, I think it was like 400 ETH.
In total, was it? Yeah, it was like 100. At that time, it was like 150,000 dollars or something like that. But anyway, it took it up to the next level, and that really started. It's interesting. You know, one of the, I think, trends of the year is how these very high value NFTs really started to almost become marketing. I mean, in a sense, it is marketing as well as being seen as kind of high grade investment assets as well. So that kicked in, and because that was kind of feeding on the cycle of the small love potion, there was quite a big increase in kind of usage. And then we've seen October and November the highest price of these multiple mystic axes increasing. I mean, it's not exponential, but I think we went from, currently highest is 300, so we went from 200 in October to 300 ETH, and the ETH price was going up then as well. So it's a kind of a multiple thing. How do you, again, that's something you're not really in control of. Could you imagine at the start of the year why Axie selling for 300 ETH, or is that just, you know, is that kind of, again, part of, you know, the market forces?
Sure. So I think the narrative that we're starting to see is the, I guess, formalization of game assets as a true asset class, right? So we're starting to see more sophisticated individuals come in and start acquiring game assets and NFTs, right? There's also, you know, I think crypto art, I think, you know, blockchain gaming, aside from us, hasn't actually had an amazing year. I think it's more that, you know, I think 2020 was the year of crypto art and also a good year for Axie. So I think, yeah, we're starting to see like more sophisticated investors coming in, getting exposure to NFTs, seeing them as, you know, very interesting, perhaps, you know, uncorrelated assets. And I think you know, we've always thought that, you know, the Mystics are kind of the jewels of the Axie ecosystem. They're great as avatars, just, and also just great for kind of showing off. And yeah, we saw, you know, we even saw someone acquire a triple Mystic recently. They made an entire social media account around it, give an interview in Cointelegraph. So there's kind of these personas, right, there that are developing, and they're, you know, I think in the future, you know, you'll start to see them as kind of, you know, marketing tools, right? Is like a brand might acquire a really rare NFT and then set up a social media account for it, and then, you know, be able to actually leverage the fame and the remarkability of that NFT to, you know, generate traffic for their brand, something like that. So I haven't put all the dots together, but, you know, there's something interesting there with the idea of, yeah, rare NFTs as avatars and you know, brands coming in to kind of, I think it shows that they're kind of, you know, future and tech forward. And so I think we'll start to see that.
But there is a downside to some degree. I don't know. The interesting thing is that the price of these very high end axes has gone up a lot during the year. But the price of the cheapest Axie has gone up, you know, fairly substantially as well. I can't remember exactly what they were worth at the start of 2020, but the last time I looked, the cheapest one was about $25 now. So, given that you need Axies to actually play the game, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but in a sense, are you pricing people out? Because you're now asking, if you need three Axies to play the game, then you're asking people to pay about $80 to get into the game, which would, for most people who are playing a game, you know, if you're saying this game costs $80, that's a bit of a stretch.
Yeah, so you know, it's definitely an interesting effect of growth, especially, you know, where we don't have you know, free axes or something like that, where, you know, the more popular the game is, you know, the entry barrier, you know, theoretically rises a bit. So I think, you know, we've actually started to see some really innovative solutions to this that have actually come from the community. So there's something called a scholarship, which is basically people will create Axie accounts and then lend them out to people, right? And because it's just an email, it's basically email login, and, you know, so you're able to log into the application using an email, use the axes, but you can't actually perform blockchain actions. So people are able to basically, you know, trust people, other people, to kind of lend out these accounts and without being able to kind of take the assets or do anything. And then, so the scholars, you know, they're kind of like workers, right? They're playing, and they're giving, you know, around 20%, I think, on average, to the people who actually own the account. So that, and those programs have gone, you know, parabolic. They're massive, and people are starting to look at kind of formalized ways of doing that, even trustlessly through smart contracts. That's been one of the things that's also allowed us to grow, despite, you know, the increasing price of Axies.
Okay, that makes sense. So, do you think that's something that because I guess is with blockchain, it's always this thing, I guess, about, you know, how much you let the community do it, and how much you know, if it's a good idea, how much do you kind of formalize it within the product? You know, would that be something where you would think, yeah, we want to make it easier, so having a lending facility in officially in the game is a better way of doing that, or is it better to let the community find its own ways?
Yeah, it's a fine line. So I think, you know, anything that's really important to the ecosystem long term, eventually we want to do it. I think, you know, something like that for us to do it requires it's a pretty big task. So you know, it is nice to see, you know, in the short run, the community step up. But yeah, we also, you know, I think want to communicate and have communicated to, you know, some people who are building kind of similar solutions. We're saying like, hey, just for transparency, long term, this is something that we want to build ourselves. So yeah, that's, you know, that's definitely it's definitely right, like an interesting dynamic, right? And so, you know, crypto, a lot of it is about like, oh, like, third party contributions and things like that. But we also, as a team, we're kind of like, you know, we're perfectionists in some ways, right? Like we're kind of like, we're like that restaurant where, you know, they build their own furniture and their silverware in-house, right? So we have that dynamic too, which I think confuses some people in the space as well, right? It's like we haven't talked about like Ronin and, you know, why are you building your own side chain? Why are you building your own? Why do you have your own marketplace? Things like that. We often get questions like that, and we kind of see it as, you know, we prefer to kind of handcraft things specifically for our users, which, you know, I think has worked. It's easier for us to say that, hey, this is our approach, and just for people to accept it, I think more recently at least.
Okay, so looking to the future, I mean, another kind of, I wouldn't say big trend, but I don't think it's a big trend, but it is clearly an accelerating trend, is lots of blockchain games are launching land. I mean, obviously that's kind of happened for a while, but land as another kind of NFT kind of class, obviously it has an idea of kind of permanence, as we understand land in the real world, and obviously it also has this kind of strong idea of kind of cash flows or that sort of thing. We're starting to see that. So you guys, you've had land out for a while, but it's still, I think you've just launched something fairly recently, the kind of first probably alpha sort of approach of actually doing something with the land. Is that the next kind of big thing for you guys in kind of 2021 to kind of really kind of take what you've done on the Axie side, Axie NFT side, and then kind of put that together with this very strong idea of kind of permanence and
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, we just released a demo for land, which I think has gotten very good response from the community so far. It's pretty bare bones, but I think we had a plot design contest, for example, and people made some really amazing things to show off. So you can kind of check those out on Twitter. But yeah, I think land is definitely a big part of our vision. I think it kind of fits very well with the idea of a nation, right? Where, you know, there are landholders, you know, true stakeholders, and then I think this concept of, you know, a game that's kind of a game that's a kind of mashup between things that everyone loves, like Stardew Valley, Animal Crossing, Pokemon. I think there's a lot of design space to be explored there as well.
And more generally, how do you see the blockchain kind of space in 2021? I know it's kind of interesting because this 2020 has been so weird, so unexpected in lots of different respects, and maybe blockchain, you know, as something that is seen as a kind of reaction to some of the kind of societal trends, you kind of wonder if everyone will be happy with everything just settling down next year and it being quite a boring year, or but crypto has its own kind of velocity.
Yeah, I don't think it's possible to have a boring year a boring year in blockchain games or a boring year in crypto. I don't expect it to be boring. I think it might be quite manic, actually. So I think we'll see, you know, maybe this year might be the year of, like, you know, distribution and scaling, right? Like people finally, you know, nailing down some type of product that's potentially scalable in terms of users. And then, we'll probably see the rollout of, you know, a couple of different solutions for, you know, it's like, either more Ethereum compatible or even like other layer ones that are, you know, basically trying to fulfill the needs of, you know, hundreds of thousands, millions of users. I mean, people always say that, right? that's like, yeah, there's gonna be a lot of growth, but I think, you know, we're starting to see that. I think that's, you know, something to keep an eye on. There will be different projects that will experiment with, you know, play to earn, having tokens, and I think that will also be a major trend.
Do you think 2021 will be the year that we'll start to see what we could consider kind of traditional kind of game companies finally taking a bit more of an interest, but actually, you know, taking this kind of seriously? because it's, you know, there are the usual suspects that kind of, you know, there's everyone kind of cites Ubisoft with its incubator program, which, you know, is a serious program, but it's not you know, Ubisoft proper. And it still seems to me, you know, interesting that there just is very little seeming even interest by the big game companies, who've obviously had a fantastic year anyway. They don't need any blockchain.
I think the traditional incumbents, I guess, so we can call them the incumbents, maybe, the incumbents are quite satisfied with, you know, what's happening, and they're doing really well. So I think, you know, it makes sense from their perspective to be a bit more conservative, right? And we haven't seen any massive, you know, a massive blockchain gaming success at scale. And so I think, you know, I think it will really, we need like our Tesla moment, right? Which is something like, you know, in the mainstream, that's sexy, that, you know, that works, that people want, that is, creating a lot of money. And then, you know, then it's, yeah, so it's kind of like we're still working on the battery, right? We're still working on the electric, We're still working on, you know, making something that, you know, is appealing. But I actually see a lot of similarities. So I do think it will be, you know, more of a, it'll be, I think, a kind of, you know, one of the upstarts that, kind of, you know, shocks the world. And then we'll start to see the incumbents come in.
Good. Lovely to talk to you as ever, Jeff. Thanks very much.
Thanks for having me. It was fun to go over the year and think towards the future.
Good. And thanks for listening. This is Blockchain Gaming World Podcast, available from all your usual podcast channels. So every week we are talking to the people who are building this crazy new world of gaming. Please do subscribe if you're interested. But thanks for listening, and hope to see you again soon.